just been advised that I may do that, and I'll ask one of the members to check in my absence. Yeah, thanks. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honourable members, the implication of the proposed amendment is to introduce an obligation to devolve powers and duties of the Municipal Council towards committee. Now, the basis of the City of Cape Town, objection to the adoption of the proposal in Form 6 of the bill is that it would encroach impermissibly on the constitutionally ordained institutional autonomy of the local sphere of government. I point out in paragraph 3 of my handout, as you will be aware, local government under the democratic constitutional dispensation the country adopted in 1996 is not a subordinate tier of government. On the contrary, it's one of the three spheres of government, which in terms of chapter 3 of the constitution are defined as distinctive, interdependent and interrelated. Section 41 of the Constitution directs that all spheres of government must, amongst other matters, respect the constitutional status, institutions, powers and functions of government in the other spheres, and does not assume any power or function except that is conferred on them in terms of the Constitution, and they must exercise their powers and perform their functions in a manner that does not encroach on the geographical, functional, or institutional integrity of government in another sphere. Now, the fundamental departure that those provisions represent from the old order was fixed by a judgment of the Constitutional Court in a matter in which my client, the City of Cape Town, was involved, City of Cape Town and Robinson case, referred to in paragraph 4 of my handout. And I have set out for you paragraphs 58 to 61 of the judgments given in that case, which is a judgment written by the current Deputy Chief Justice, Mr. Justice Moscietti. I don't intend to read to you those paragraphs in full, but if I could just highlight certain aspects of what the judge held. He said that the advent of the Constitution has enhanced rather than diminished the autonomy and status of local government that obtained under the interim constitution. And members will be aware that the interim constitution gave local government more autonomy and powers than the old order legislation did. He went on at the end of paragraph 59 of the judgment to refer to section 43 and 151(2) of the Constitution to make the point that those provisions confer original legislative and executive authority on municipal councils. You will understand later why I've underlined there the reference to municipal councils. The Constitution, said the judge, expressly precludes the national or a provincial government from impeding the proper exercise of powers and functions of municipality. Thus, the municipality has the right to govern the local government affairs of its area and community. However, the duties, powers, and rights of municipalities have to be exercised subject to national or provincial legislation, if I could underline the words as provided for in the Constitution. Makes the point in paragraph 16 that the sphere of local government is independent, inviolable, and possesses the constitutional latitude within which to define and express its unique character. Goes on later to say, municipality is not just a mere creature of statute. Municipality enjoys original and constitutionally entrenched powers, functions, rights, and duties that may be qualified or constrained by law, and I emphasize, and only to the extent that the Constitution permits. It's quite clear from what the judge said there that it's important in having regard to the extent to which national legislation can encroach on the local government sphere that one has to have regard to the relevant provisions of the Constitution itself. And I've set out, again, I don't intend to take you point by point through each one of the points that I've set out. I've set out what I submit are the relevant provisions of the Constitution in paragraph 5 of the handout I've provided you with. And I would wish to highlight some of those provisions. In 5.1, I've referred you to section 151.2 of the Constitution, which provides that the executive and legislative authority of a municipality is vested in its municipal council. The significance of that will emerge. A municipality has the right to govern on its own initiative. These are the words of the Constitution. The local government affairs of its community, subject to national and provincial legislation, again, as provided for in the Constitution. That's section 151.3. And then in 5.3, the national or a provincial government may not compromise or impede a municipality's ability or right to exercise powers or perform its functions. But then, due by way of emphasis to the point that I make in paragraph 5.7, which is reference to the Constitution there, which is a reference to section 160, subsection 1 of the Constitution. A municipal council, and again I've said the council, the elected council, makes decisions concerning the exercise of all the powers and the performance of all the functions of the municipality. As to elect a chairperson, no reference to a mayor, the speaker is the chairperson, may elect an executive committee and other committees subject to national legislation. And it says may elect a committee, which is important for the purposes of the consideration of Clause 6 of the bill before you. Moving on to sub 5.9, national legislation, and this is what the Constitution provides in terms of the extent to which national legislation may inform or decide the powers of a municipal council. National legislation may provide criteria for determining various things, and one of those is whether municipal councils may elect an executive committee or any other committee. You see the word there, may, corresponds with the wording of the Structures Act as it currently is. As soon as you change the Structures Act in section 72 to replace may with must, you are, in my position, in danger of creating a contradiction between the provision of the Constitution and the legislation, which is, I don't have to explain, if permissible. Paragraph 6 of my submission, it's evident from the aforementioned that the seat of plenary power in the sphere of local government is in the municipal council. Also evident that the legislation contemplated in terms of section 154.1 of the Constitution, that's national or provincial legislation, is permitted to be empowering in nature, not in the sort that would derogate or take away from the plenary powers of a municipal council. National legislation may prescribe criteria for determining whether a municipal council may elect an executive committee or other committees and the size of such committees. The effect of such legislation might well be to forbid a municipal council from devolving its powers to committees or other structures. And in fact, if you look at section 161C of the Constitution, which I set out in paragraph 5.7 of my handout, you'll see that the power by way of national legislation to impose a restriction on municipal councils to devolve their powers is expressly contemplated by the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution which mandates or permits national legislation to prescribe to municipal councils that they must devolve their power to any committee. And that's the point I make in paragraph 7 of the handout. The object of the provisions in the Constitution is not to prescribe to municipal councils how they must conduct their government, but rather to regulate the extent to which such councils, in appropriate circumstances, may devolve the original and plenary powers invested in them by the Constitution. I refer you in paragraph 8 of the handout to another judgment of the Constitutional Court in what I call for convenience, the Executive Council versus the case matter, which is a case where the provincial government of the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal challenged amendments to local local government. They challenged certain provisions in the Extractive Act on the basis that they were unconstitutional. Some of the challenges were sustained, some of them weren't. But in paragraph 102 of that judgment, which was a judgment of Justice Andrew Norbo, it was held that ward committees are not committees of the sort contemplated by section 166 of the Constitution. They are committees of the sort contemplated by section 161c. The court held at paragraph 103 of its judgment, and I quote, the power of municipalities to appoint committees is subject to section 161c. They have the power to elect an executive committee or other committees subject to national legal punishment. There is nothing in this provision which suggests that, quote, other committees, unquote, are limited to any particular committee. This provision governs the appointment of any committee, including the committees concentrated in section 166C of the Constitution. The effect of section 161C is that the power of the municipalities to appoint committees concentrated in section 161C is subject to national legislation. Now, the references to the power of the municipalities are, in my submission, significant. Regulating the power is an exercise quite distinguishable from prescribing an obligation. There is no provision in the Constitution which permits national or provincial legislation to prescribe to a municipal council that it must devolve its plenary executive power. On the contrary, the general tenor of Chapter 7 of the Constitution is to permit national legislation to limit the power of municipal councils to devolve power. Now, the provisions of the Extractive Act are entirely consistent with the explanation of the constitutional context that I have offered above in this document. The section defines the system of municipal government that may be implemented by a municipal council. And I've set out for the committee at subpage 8 the provisions of section 7. I'm not going to go through it and read it, but I would emphasize this about it. It provides for the different types of municipalities that may be established under each category of municipality. And you'll see in the various sub-paragraphs of the section, A to E, each case, apart from C, it uses the word allows for, and in C it says limit, which underlines the point I thought to make earlier. The Constitution allows and provides for national legislation to regulate the extent to which a municipal council may be allowed devolve its power to other sub-councils, ward committees, or any other form of committee, such as an executive committee. And if the Constitution allows national legislation to regulate that devolutionary power, even to the extent of forbidding a devolution of power. Nowhere does it provide the national legislation may prescribe, obligate a devolution of power. You'll see in sub-paragraph 6, of section 7, there are some municipalities and it's normally Class C municipalities where the plenary executive system applies. Those municipalities have no power to devolve any of their powers to committees. So the municipal council has to exercise all those municipalities' legislative and executive powers itself. And I submit that the language of section 7 is consistent with the interpretation of the relevant constitutional framework that I've offered above, more particularly the incidence of plenary power to the municipal council and the provision for the enablement, i.e. allowing for or limitation of authority to devolve that power as appropriate. Section 8 of the Structured Act proceeds from the provisions of section 7. It deals with the type of municipality that may be established in terms of section 8 and provide for those types to be defined by the systems of municipal government, the combinations of systems of such government that may be implemented in the various parts of the municipality contemplated under sections 8A to 8H. Nothing obliges any municipal council to devolve power if it does not choose to do so. You'll see sections 9E and 10C of the Structured Act actually are examples of national legislation which prohibit certain types of municipalities from devolving any of their municipal council power. Now, the emphasis on a constitutional regulation on the devolution of a municipal council's power, as distinct from any prescription of such development, is also evident in section 59 of the Local Government Municipal Systems Act, which provides that the municipal council may not devise a system of delegation that is in any manner inconsistent with section 162 of the Constitution or the Structures Act. Therefore, submitted that a provision that prescribes to a municipal council that it must create certain committees, with the implied attendant obligation to devolve powers and duties on such committees, would be inconsistent with the provisions of the Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First letter of the position.
Thank you very much. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a presentation. Any questions, comments?
Okay. Okay. I just want to like to hear, thanks from Kekal, I just wanted to hear, despite the legal interpretation from Kekal, that in terms of the relevant section and work committee, what is the situation in Kekal? Have you implemented, or was this the reason why you have not implemented? Because the reason I'm asking this question, I think the object of the bill is to make sure that such an establishment is being regulated through an act of parliament, and as I would believe that we are this developmental state, whereby communities should be seen participating. And I think if we are to take you back to, for instance, the Systems Act also, the whole spirit of the whole Act, the spirit of the in the whole Act, is that we should entrench the character of community participation. Now I'm separating the two because I would, at this stage, engage in a legal interpretation of that. The same applies also to the Constitution that has been the founding document. That whatever through an act of Parliament we try to make those principles a reality towards implementation. I just want to ask as to whether the city is having a problem in establishing them. And where they are established, what problem do you have despite your legal interpretation? Yes, sir.
Okay. He is their legal representative. I don't know whether he will be able to respond to the politics of the question. But he is a company there, so maybe his partner might want to do that. Any other questions, comments? Domen? No, she has questions in the committee. No, as a group, right? I'm prepared to answer on behalf of Penta.
No, no.
No, she has questions in the committee. You know that. Now, when the act was originally drawn up, the possibility of ward committees was left as a choice for municipalities. So you are arguing that even at that stage, the legislative board, we in Parliament, did isn't at the right that there must be more facilities. You're not arguing that we gave a certain leverage to municipalities which cannot be taken away now. So it was legislated originally that ward committees should be left as a choice to municipalities. You're arguing because the national legislature couldn't, from the sphere of government, prescribe that there should be, that there should be ward committees. That is my first question. The second one is to devolve powers and duties. If the ward committees are only there to allow for the public to participate in council matters, no obligations are put on these committees to force them to give their views on council decisions or to participate in any of the decision making of council whatsoever. Doesn't that, if that is true, doesn't that let your argument fall away, that implies that there are powers and duties that are devolved to committees? I mean, or are you arguing that why would you then create it? That there must be some powers, some duties that they have to perform, and the national legislature can't prescribe it.
Okay. Do I hear you correctly to be asking whether the presumption that there is evolution here?
Okay.
Yes. That is because
yeah, my interest would be the reference for the constitution and the legislation that covers the issue of the local government, especially whereby you express that the autonomy exists to people. I cannot see you now. Yeah, the autonomy which you refer to of the local government. Now, my question is, the issue of the ward committee, it was done because of trying to promote the issue of public participation. So now, I would like to know from the city of Cape Town, so what do you put forward to us as this committee that would sort of give a balance between the public participation part of which is being done through the ward committee. Do you have something that you could suggest? Because from our side, we do feel that this is what we have offered, and we also feel that these ward committees, they need to be given certain powers in order that they should be able to function to be effective one way or another. Thank you.
You think my reference, if you would go to page 36 of Municipal Systems Act, the nearly the whole page is the following. It's a must. That's to make my point, that under the IDP tradition. I would like, that's why I said, the Structures Act, right with the Municipal Systems Act. How would you interpret your presentation? Because in the spirit of this Act, we were enforcing, that's why I'm saying, nearly every paragraph here, clause, that has must. And it was in recognition to the very relevant chapter in the Constitution.
Okay.
this step is a bit more excessive, but very thanks to my rescue early on. I'm not personally representing the center. I'm engaged really on their behalf to make the position because I specialize in constitutional practice. I'm an independent member of the bar.
But I guess you can take the political heat on your behalf as well.
I just wish to make our position clear. But some of the questions, quite clearly, and in the context of the position that was made, raised legal issues. And honourable members who touched on the issue of community participation in government were entirely correct. It is a principle of our government that communities participate in government and be facilitators in their participation of government as much as possible. And Chapter 7 of the Constitution contains such provisions. Section 17, I will never refer to page 36 of the Systems Act. I don't have a copy of the Systems Act in front of me, but I do know, for example, that Section 17 of the Systems Act obliges municipalities to create mechanisms to facilitate community participation. I know that the city of Cape Town has what it calls ward forums, or is in the process of establishing ward forums in terms of a bylaw to fulfill just that purpose. The difference between those mechanisms, as Section 17 of the Systems Act refers to, and ward committees, is that the ward committee in the constitutional framework has recognized in that judgment of Mr. Jackson's Global that I referred to, the Executive Council of Mr. Jackson. Ward committees are expected to fulfill executive and legislative powers of the Municipal Council at a more localized level, which is something different to community participation. It's devolution of municipal power to a lower level. It's more than using the committee as a sounding board or an opportunity for a local community to channel its views up to either a sub-council or a municipal council. That's the fundamental difference. And the constitutional principle is the constitution contemplates the legislative and executive powers of a municipality to be vested in its municipal council. And it leaves it up to the municipal council to determine itself to what extent, if at all, to devolve those powers. The power of devolution may be regulated by national legislation. The national legislation may prohibit the devolution, which it does in sections 9 and 10 of I believe that the points that I've made answer to the extent that I'm able the questions addressed by the three members of the portfolio committee today.
And that's what I think. No, I think this is what is a good exercise in that we give a legal opinion. But I think we will have to engage on now, because I was getting worried if you give a different of what is happening. But what I hear now is that you take us back to my initial point that there will be a need to engage with the CPMG on the real situation on the ground, in this case, the city of Cape Town. That if there is a total devolution of power, which is what they are challenging, I then have to say, I do not think this is what this act is saying, because of the relevant section, I think section 37 of the Constitution. But I'm saying then we have to engage, because from where you stand, you might give the right interpretation in terms of the court ruling. But my initial question was that, and it's true that the chair came to your rescue, that politicians locally have to tell us as to how is the implementation of the provisions of the Census Act as it was intended for.
clarify that, because I was really having a problem with how it was happening. Because we, some of us, as a part of the legislative process, we even know as to what motivated government to come with such thinking.
Tell me, Honorable Chair. I'm Maritim Horab. I'm the Senior Secret Advisor from the Office of the Chief Secret Advisor. As I say, Honorable Chair, there is a problem, this issue of ward committees. My impression when someone is talking about ward committee is to give people, ordinary people on the ground, a chance to speak. I'm scared that there can be a possibility that we can repeat the same problem. If you take into consideration the written constitutional court judgment, the doctors for life and the traditional health, the cases which we are dealing about traditional health practitioners being, the court explained clearly that the nature of our democracy is a participatory democracy, which means people have to participate. So if the ward committees is a mechanism to give people the chance to speak, because we can't say that the court even makes a distinction between the elected representatives and the ordinary people on the ground. Because, of course, elected representatives, they are part of democracy, but the court also encourages the participatory democracy, which means people must be given a chance to speak. If the ward committees, or this ward committee is a mechanism to give people a chance to speak, well, I won't see anything wrong with that. But it's a pity that we have just received this document. We didn't have a chance to reflect on this case. Honorable Chair.
I know from which perspective they are coming from. We cannot, if the system is introduced and we find it working and needs to be improved, we'll move that direction. I think 80% of the local authorities in this country have ward committees, and we have learned lessons and good practices in those committees. And we need the amendments by consolidating that policy in a structured way. And unfortunately, of course, we are very much aware that it's our neighbor, and it's already not very responsible for that. Yes, it is. But I think we might prepare to allow a situation where we make the discretionality. And that's what we're trying to correct, because we want to see uniformity in this country in a structured way. That does not take away your word forum, your block forum. That are still there that people are still using. But I think the directive of the state law advisor is changing. We wanted to have a structure that would, communicate directly into the country in other ways. But not a single structure, a structure that will be user friendly, people will be able to communicate with. Whether powers are devolved or not, that's another debate. And unfortunately, we did not have people in three cases, we did not have the privileges of going through a document one, two, and the case law, the case that we are referring to, we did not have the opportunity. But I think out of our experience, throughout
the first years of our crisis, we have discovered value in having one committee. Hence, we are extending this to cover all municipalities in an expected way, the way we are here. And of course, indeed, it's our intention to make sure that this one committee has got some little bit of key to fight, because they are very good people, I think.
Any other comments?
On the contestation of the plus six, it's constitutionality. Cape Town reckons it won't fly constitutional. We can see that question from Honorable Domin. We have not an opportunity to reflect on that. Okay, thank you very much. I think that moves to the next presentation. We are recording Mr. Dati Honorable Nicole.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Yeah, I think that the committee, it is good that we do get presentations from different groups of thought. And these presentations would assist us towards looking into what are those areas which are supposed to be looked into in the constitution, as well as those that are here in school the legislation. But the purpose for bringing everybody on board is for us to be empowered on certain issues that are going to handicap us to move towards our destination. I think.
Thank you.
Members, the
you want to do the talk?
No,
quick. I just wanted to ask one or say one thing more. I mean, legal advisors of the department or parliament would have that we definitely have to consider this. And a question that comes to the fore for me is the question, if you have ward committees, does that mean that you devolve part of the federal executive power of a council? That is a central question that I just want to put that we also have to look into, because this was part of the argument, and it's clear for me that is an issue that we have to consider. No, certainly with the politics we will differ. But the issue is about the law. The department which proposes this legislation will respond to those questions. I don't have to. I mean, you and I can actually answer that question. You and I, specifically, it doesn't mean that. It means something completely different. But that is not the point necessarily. Although it is raised as part of the motivation why we shouldn't do it, it is based on the assumption that it doesn't, okay? Well, we know it doesn't mean that. The constitutionality, whether this government, whether this piece or this law directly lies in the authority of Council for Residents Affairs in the contestation. So both the state law and advisor have 7 hours to come back to us and the department, so that tomorrow when we enter into this consideration in the committee, we have their views ready, so that when we proceed, it is with the wisdom of the legal interpretations of the statute, so that when we proceed, we do so with an understanding. Thank you very much, sir. Let's get the next presentation from the, sorry, from the member's office. Yes. Who is from the member's office? How do you pronounce your name?
Weihart, Mr. Chairman.
Sir?
Weihart.
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 You're an African.
German?
A public African.
German.
Oh, German. Okay.
Many, many, many centuries ago, German.
Okay,
yeah, okay.
Mr. Chairman, and honorable members, I wish to address valuation issues. And more specifically, I would like to refer to section 33 of the bill. And then more specifically, section 33B of the bill, where the recommendation is that the word "the value of" be removed from the proposed legislation. I have a document that I submitted earlier on, which I will talk to you. The deletion of the word "the value of" may have the effect that a structure in the nature of a Kuburg nuclear power station is reduced to null, land null. This instance is made with reference to the famous Blue Circle Limited versus Valuation Appeal Board, Lichtenberg, and another 1991 appellate division case. It is a well-known valuation case that took place in Transvaal, which I will talk to a little bit later on. In the context of market value, as the legislation now stands, the value of, and the emphasis on the word value, machinery and equipment will nearly be discarded. In other words, the legislation says at the moment, discard the value of machinery and equipment. In the proposal, in other words, it is merely an arithmetic calculation to exclude the value of machinery and equipment. However, in terms of the proposed change, the actual equipment and machinery must be discarded, which, if one looks at the Blue Circle judgment, could have the effect that the notional empty shell may be useless for any alternative purpose. And I'm not only referring to nuclear power stations, I'm referring to any similar structures that you can imagine. In the Transvaal, we have many, many more power stations, but those are the kind of structures that are involved here, and I'll talk to that now. I'm not sure why...
Why do you say it's not that? There is legal business for this.
Sorry?
Why do you think it's not that?
No, there's no legal business. In the northern provinces.
No, I guess for accuracy and clarity, whether you're talking about the past, because you're talking about legislation, so I just thought you're talking about it to clear my confusion.
I'm referring to the northern provinces, which contain many, many power stations, where the coal mines are.
Okay, correct.
In the Blue Circle case, when considering the situation in which, after the exclusion from the structure of the machinery contained within it, an empty shell would result, the court accepted that the notionally resulting empty shell could have a null market value because it would have no value to the notional winning buyer of the land. Now, just to explain to you, I need to go back again and need to make it clear. The legislation as it stands at the moment says, discard the value. The proposal says, discard the equipment and the machinery. And if you discard the equipment and the machinery, then bear in mind that in the case of the nuclear power station, that machinery equipment is part of the power station. If you discard that machinery equipment, what you will be left with is a non-economical, dysfunctional shell, which has been argued will have a very, very low value. So the proposal, and this has been discussed in the Luxembourg case, in the Blue Circle case, I can quote more provisions of the case, but the proposal is that in effect, a structure like nuclear power stations or power stations could have a nominal value on a valuation roll. Now, if you think in the context that the Kuburg nuclear power station is probably valued in the vicinity of R1 billion at the moment, if this legislation is passed, the value could very well be almost nothing. Machinery, which are part of the building. They are two little machinery.
if you think them away, the structure that will be there will be worth nothing. And in the case of a Kuba or a power station or any other similar structure, the value will reduce to zero or very close to zero. That is the concern of the city of Cape Town, for sure. And in my submission, I have said that I have legal opinions that have discussed it. One can refer to the principal case. We have, during our deliberations around the valuation of the Kuba power station, albeit having been done with previous legislation, these issues were raised. So it is a big concern to the city of Cape Town, for sure.
Now, if you say you don't understand why they want to think that part of the government, you try to understand from their point of view.
I could not understand why that decision was made.
So you didn't try and check to find out, just for your own understanding, as a person who might be likely to guide implementation, did you try to understand why they are doing it?
No.
You didn't get an opportunity to do so.
Unfortunately, as with the old world and bureaucracy, this came to my desk very late.
Okay.
The process, I never saw the original draft, hence our very late comments.
Okay. Any other comments you wanted to make?
Mr. Chairman, this is an actual comment relating to the bill. I have heard of comments, but they do not relate to the bill. They are proposals that we wish to make to improve the valuation practice.
Okay.
Specifically, the municipality of South Africa. And I don't know if you would allow me that opportunity to talk to that, or whether I should focus only on the bill as it stands at the moment.
Well, to the extent that what we're going to say impacts on what we want to do now, urgently, and it's necessary to the bill, we may do so. But if you think it can wait to be dealt with later, please let us deal with it later. You can submit your comments on that practice to the Secretary here. We'll certainly call you when we deal with those issues to consider your observation.
In future,
so you must make a judgment.
I know that the bill needs to be passed quickly, so if I can get an opportunity at some later time to make proposals for further amendments, that would be appreciated.
Yeah, no, sure.
Thank you.
So you are thinking that they won't necessarily be urgent and quick?
Well, they are urgent, but I don't want to handle the bill.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure that you judge the issue, right? Thanks, yeah. Just aim to do
Shepherd, I get worried, although it's the right of Cape Town Valuers to share their submission. You know, when we dealt with the property registry, we took days, and I want to quote, when Telkom was invited to come and explain, on page 16 we have a section that gives the public service infrastructure. As an example, we engaged for days on end, whether you still remember, where they were unpacking what it meant in the same context as they are saying. And Mr. Downman, I think you were present, so we were saying that. We learned a lot because they were doing a breakdown of what we see but don't understand, making us understand. Even power stations, power substations, and many other gas and whatever, fuel plants, they are just, I'm not accusing, but I'm making a reference that proves, I'm not sure if you did participate, and I don't say it's not your right, but I'm just raising this deficit because Cape Town was implemented that time. We took days just on this, under this item of participating infrastructure. Where different countries, and hence I'm quoting in the telephone, that they make us understand what it means to be an infrastructure, whether on the ground, you know, speaking their own language, as I see by them. So I'm ready that, if whoever was present from City of Cape Town must also have communicated, I'm not sitting down on their desk, but I'm saying this in the presence of honorable members, our men and others. No, I'm not talking politics, I'm talking facts here. I'm just saying, that's why I'm saying respectfully. I'm not putting down what you're saying, but I'm saying I would like to hear as to what are the arguments, because...
Well, the gentleman has said that he doesn't understand why he has said that.
Yeah.
Just this.
Yeah. I think I thought Mr. White was coming in as the honorable should be saying.
Yes, might be your friend, but he's not a member of this committee.
You are even a thinker.
Oh, by the way, my dear. Previous question.
Yeah, ever since. I think I agree with our Lord Provincial Guru. There were many parts of national importance. So we said for the economic value, but that is in a transformation of society. I think the presenter should look at this thing from that particular context. Because there were very clear reasons that were advanced at that time by all those who are running this, what is called, faith institution. What does that actually mean? And it would have an impact in ensuring that particularly the African cities and disadvantaged communities benefit from this program. So there was a serious economic factor that had to be considered, and that is why this amendment here is trying to consolidate that position. And I think really it's a matter of policy settlement. As I said, it's a national issue of very important.
The department would like to make a quick comment on that, isn't that?
Okay, so thanks. I understand that the department, the committee will be able to participate at a later stage, but I just thought that it might assist for us to clarify where this comes from, so that the colleague from the city of Cape Town, because I don't want him to live here, not understanding where it comes from and what was intended, so that if I give this reason, perhaps it will be able to give the committee as to whether I ask it or not, so that it is supposed not to enter into a discussion about the issue. The way they go in the particular section, the suggestion for it to be deleted, it comes from our interaction with Bangladesh, which includes some of the mental values. And I'm not so sure whether the city of Cape Town was not involved in some of these meetings, but it includes some of the metropolitan bylaws, including the city of Cape Town. You can talk to Mr. Bennett Price, who is also a member of the South African Institute of Bylaws, was involved in some of the things. And I'm also not so sure, because I see that this thing comes from you, and there is a city bylaw for the city of Cape Town, as to whether this was the same. If it's on behalf of yourself as a bylaw, or it's on behalf of the unit as a whole, which is a really taking questions in my mind as to whether the city bylaw has got blessings into the thing. But those are some of the things which you might need to deal with. But where it came from is that the bylaws were saying the interpretation of this act, of this particular sections of the act, is giving them confusion. Because the act is saying you need to disregard some of these particular things, some of them which are under the subject of the health, some just and what they were dealing with, it was like from their own health bylaws themselves. They were different interpretations as to what it means. Because if it is to be disregarded, some of them they were saying, you simply ignore it. So there is no need for the bylaws to go and determine the issue. That is how some of them were interpreting the things. That if it is to be disregarded, then you have to go and determine the value of this particular thing. After that, you subtract it from the profile. So that is where the confusion is coming from. And the effect is the thing is excluded from dating anyway in terms of the head. Why do you need to go to that extra length of dating to determine the value of the thing, subtract it from the profile to start with? And if you take into account that some of the things are immutable structures which are under the subject of the profile, including some of the things which you regard as equipment and machinery. So that is where they were coming from, and hence they were saying, they recommended it doesn't come from other city and it comes from Bangladesh. That we need to take the rules well, so that it is clear that this is disregarded, and if we do it, there will be uniform interpretation from their side, which you are cannot to understand, so that they won't have to decide as to whether they need to value the thing subtracted or not. They simply ignore it. So that is where it comes from, but it comes from the bylaws profession itself. So I just wanted to clarify that as where it comes from, that
in your time you might need to share with the colleague whether the interpretation of your colleague who walk from the uniform interpretation of this act is makes sense or not. But that is the post if I need that to clarify.
Okay.
There's a question of administrative burden. I think the legislation that we passed, we should not be only bothered about the financial implications, but the administrative burden which imposes on municipalities. So this part that you are addressing relates to that observation. And so it is on that understanding that we found it and we understood it. But if there is any other view that you guys would like to pursue, this was today, but any other view that you might still have before sunset, you are welcome to do so, solicitation to place for interest otherwise. But that's the objective. That's the comment.
Chair, I just want to clarify on the presentation document that we received. There are the comments, the headings are the review of the municipal value, the decision, the market value, the condition of the property. So I just want clarity so that our general remarks that you say that you would like us to attend to at the later stage is not pertinent for this specific piece of legislation before us. And I see there that you put in one of the paragraphs about the appeal board of Cape Town that would have to be viewed over 30,000 of the section. Can you just in the bypass tell us, have they been appointed yet?
No. Mr. Chairman, the appeal board, we are still waiting the appointment of the appeal board by the Premier and Congress. But in the meantime, the municipal value is dealing with the objections as included in the Act.
But, sorry, just to get back to you, these two are, to the City of Cape Town, they are critical issues. Bearing in mind that the city is now completed its second metropolitan general election. And they are critical issues for us, but having listened to the Chair, I do not want to impede the passing of this bill. And if there's an opportunity in the future to look at these issues, which we feel are important, then I would like that opportunity.
Ladies and gentlemen, those are the presentations. Members, we have to reflect on this, and we hope that the department can provide us with their reaction to some of the issues that we raised. There were issues that relate to the technical relations. Law sometimes, as it gets passed, have the problem often of conflicting with other existing legislation, in a sense, conflicting. So where we can clean that up in what is suggested may be the case in this particular case, let us know, because that view has been made. But really other issues that the other proposals or submissions, come back to us with your recommendations from your caucuses, so that we must process this view tomorrow. We are meeting again tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Sorry? Oh, and the venue is changed to G26. I wonder if that's a very... whether there's a very friendly thing to G26 for continuation of our deliberations of the peace. So bring your views from your caucuses so that we fast track this thing. We are working under pretty tight time frame because we have to meet the deadlines for this to be considered by the NGOP as well. So that's what we need to do. Thank you very much. We appreciate your having spared your time come and contribute to our wisdom and understanding of the issues and concerns. We will try to take on board. You do understand positively and negatively your input. Thank you very much. Until tomorrow. Thanks.
appreciate that.